Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, April, what is it today? The 13th already? Wow. April 13th, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. And how are you, Brian?
Hello.
Hello. And Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, Jeff. In fact, I'll say it's great to have you back this time.
Oh, yes. And thank you for covering for me yesterday. You guys rock.
Of course we do.
Yeah, of course you do, which is why I was not worried for even a moment when I had to leave you guys at the helm.
It sounds like we might be there on Monday again, and I'm already plotting your demise.
Excellent. I mean, hey.
Yeah.
I mix those up sometime. Yeah. Hey, okay, well, as long as we're here, and I have not met my demise yet, how about we talk a little bit about the FBI again?
Again.
All right. So here's the deal. The San Bernardino iPhone unlocking case is behind us because the FBI was able to find a way to get into the iPhone without having to push to get the court order that they got so that Apple would have to unlock it for them. They don't have to do that now.
I got a quibble. The case is behind us, but the ramifications are still going to have a lasting presence for a while.
Yes, and it's as if you read my mind, because that's exactly where I was heading. But you said it wonderfully, so thank you. So we have the ramifications from that case that we're going to be dealing with for a long time, which is kind of where we are today. So FBI Director James Comey has been talking about the case. And he said yesterday, I believe it was at Catholic University, speaking to a bunch of law students, that he's glad that case is in the past now, and then he went on to say I'm trying to find the right word. I don't want to say disappointed, but all right. Well, we'll just muddle through it. What it comes down to is he is not pleased with the way some of this has played out in the public, and he thinks that we have a situation where people have been getting too emotional about the case, and the whole thing with encryption. But then he says the fact that this ended up becoming a public fight had unintended benefits. And those benefits, or benefit, is that we did start to get this public discussion about encryption and privacy. And my take on this is that these benefits, or benefit that he referred to, this was not unintended.
No, it was the whole reason.
Yeah. Yeah, the FBI made a conscious decision to make this a very public case. And if you're making it a very public case, it's because you want people talking about it. So how is the discussion that came out of this an unintended benefit?
Well, it was probably unintended from his viewpoint in that I suspect that Director Comey and the leadership of the FBI thought that the public discussion would result in a backlash against Apple, and it did not.
Well, not entirely. I mean, there were a lot of people that sided with the FBI, and I think a lot of those were people that had yet to be informed. I don't want to say they were ignorant, because that word comes with the wrong connotation. It's just people don't, you know, don't spend their days learning about this stuff like we do.
Read my bit about camps?
Camps.
No. I divided people into four camps on
okay.
this issue.
All right.
And the camp you're talking about is actually more pro-law enforcement than it is ignorant. The only thing that matters is law enforcement and or their vision of national security.
Well, then that's a big camp because, the numbers, anytime, a major news organization did a poll about this, should Apple do it or not, it was close to 50-50 in terms of the answers that they got. If we had done a poll on it, it wouldn't have gone that way. But, we have a self-selecting audience, right?
Right.
So,
true.
So, that's a big group. I can't imagine that 100% of those people that answered yes, Apple should unlock the phone are just blindly pro law enforcement.
Correct. Yeah, definitely not.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So here's more of what he said. Director Comey feels that the emotions surrounding this discussion need to come down, and he feels like there is a problem with people first talking about the whole encryption debate on Twitter, and he also feels that our best interests are not being served by talking about encryption in absolutes.
It's too bad that it's kind of an absolutist topic.
I know.
It's very binary. You have encryption or you don't.
Yes, and it's as if, again, Brian, you are reading my mind, because that's how I've been describing it to people. It is a binary point. And now, Dave, you deal with, from a technical level, with a lot of things like this through your own network, through the things you research and experiment with. Have you seen any situation where encryption is not really a binary situation?
The thing we talked about yesterday, the textilizer software, mm-hmm. right? Encryption stays intact with that, but the software is doing something and we don't know how it's working. But if we just take their statements at face value, and I realize there's danger in doing that, but just for the sake of discussion, they can tell whether you were using your phone, but can't tell anything else about that usage. No contacts, not even the content of your text messages, right? No data is shared in that sense. So, but there is, how are they doing that? So, no, encryption is a binary thing, but privacy versus encryption can be two separate things. And in that case, they are, right?
Sure. Yeah. And yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah. So yeah, I can't think of, encryption either works to protect the, whatever it is you're protecting against the people you want to protect it against, or it does not. Now, if you use that definition, then yes, you could say, well, I want the government to have a backdoor to my data, but I don't want any other people to, I was going to say, I don't want bad guys, but I don't want to put it that way. I don't want anyone else to have access to it. But yes, I want the government to have that backdoor. As long as the keys never leave the government's hands, then you do have this non-binary encryption thing, right? Or maybe you don't. Maybe it only is about protecting the data from the people you don't want to get it. And if you're okay with the government having it, then you don't need to worry. Then that's not part of your equation, right? So it's it's binary, but not. You want access to your data, right? It's not a one-way street. You're not just dumping your data into this encrypted folder and never able to see it again, right? So I mean, in that sense, I think we have to qualify it. I think we have to say encryption is about keeping the people you don't want to see your data from seeing it. And in that sense, it's absolutely binary. They either got to see it or they didn't.
Yeah, but the whole deal with being okay with the government having that backdoor access is that if that backdoor access exists, it exists as a target for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. But again, I could give I could have my data, right? And I could say, well, I have this piece of data or that whatever, and I've encrypted it, but I'm okay with Brian having access to it. Okay, let's take the government out of it, right? I'm okay with you having access, but I don't want Jeff to ever have access to this, right? Now, let's say you, so I give you whatever it is, the key, and you put the key somewhere, and then Jeff's fishing around on your computer someday and finds the key. And now Jeff has access to my data, right? So that has now failed. It's possible for any one to, it doesn't have to just be the government having this key. It's possible for anyone to have the key compromised. It's possible for, in that scenario, Jeff to be fishing around on my computer. And we've already told him about his demise.
I know. Why is he fishing around? This is why you didn't want him to have access to it, because he's fishing around on our computers.
That's right.
That guy's kind of a jerk.
But you should never have let me sit in front of your computer, Brian.
See? But I mean, so I mean, there's this, and I understand as soon as I say, but I'm okay with the government having data, that statement just comes with too much baggage, right? So let's take them out of it. And we can, and it's still the same thing. There's this group of people that I want to have access to this data. And then there's the everyone else that I don't want to have access to this data. And you have to trust that the people to whom you are giving access are able to keep their ability to access that data to themselves.
This sort of flies in the face of most of what we've been saying about the importance of end-to-end encryption. That the reason why Apple does end-to-end encryption is because having the keys exist means that anybody can theoretically get access to those keys.
Well, if I iMessage you, and I am doing so knowing that this data is end-to-end encrypted. And by the way, we've taken a detour here. We were talking about encryption at rest, and now we're talking about end-to-end encryption. But the same principles can apply. I send this to you, and I'm trusting that no one else in the path can read it, right? But if your phone is sitting there, and you don't have your phone, but it's sitting on the coffee table at your house, and you've chosen to have your phone, instead of just displaying you got a text message from Dave, it actually displays the contents of that message. Well, that's now decrypted. And
I don't think that's the same thing, though. I think this is more about...
That's why I differentiated between at rest and in transit, because... Okay. It's two different things, right? So we're on a little bit of a detour here, but it's the same concept. I sent that message trusting that not only was it going to be encrypted in transit, but that on the other end, it was going to be cared for in a way that the people that I don't want to see it aren't going to see it. And unless you and I have had that conversation and I said, hey, man, make sure, you know, don't do this, then you don't know. You know what I mean? You would have no way of knowing that, oh, by the way, don't share this with your roommate. It's like, maybe you don't care if your roommate sees your text message. You know what I mean?
So really what you're talking about is, do people want to have the ability to control who has access to their encrypted data and who does not?
Yeah, and I would say yes, and people should.
And how about if I massage that just a little bit more, or refine that a little bit more, and say, you would like to be able to control who has access to the encrypted data under your personal control?
And see, now that goes differently, right? Because if I have data that is encrypted but shared, you know, under my personal control, what does that mean?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, that's a good question. As soon as someone else has the ability to decrypt it, unless the data is stored in a way that I hold it, right? So it's on a USB stick or on my iPhone and not being backed up, you know, to a cloud. So that's why a USB stick is a little bit easier to talk about. If it's on the USB stick, the fact that you have the password to it is irrelevant if you don't possess the stick itself.
Right. So you now have control, or still have control, over the data.
I currently have control over the data. Now, if somebody comes into my house while either I'm not here or I am and takes the stick either way, well, okay, one barrier down, right? Now all they need to do is talk to somebody else that has the key, and there are a series of binary scenarios, but it is, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, no, it's not binary. It can't be unless there's no one, including you, that has access to that data.
We somehow wound up in the great rabbit hole of the species Oryctolagus caniculus semanticus.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And it was a fun ride. Yeah. Hey, I would love to keep going on about this, but there's another topic I really do want to hit before we wrap up. So I'm going to move us on, and we can come back to this at another day, and I bet we will. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, what do you guys think, now that we've had several months of iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, what do you think of 3D Touch?
Love it. I wish they'd do something with it.
Yeah, that just about sums up what has been said recently about it. Jason Snell was probably the most recent sort of attention getting piece about this particular topic, where he said basically that, like, Apple needs to do something with it this year. And it's an interesting thing. It feels like a gimmick. Because no one can design for it. No developers, not really even Apple, can design for it in a way that it's necessary to have, because they sell devices that don't have it, that run iOS, including the most recently released iPhone, the SE, right? Doesn't have 3D touch. And I'm sure there's all kinds of reasons for that, cost or thickness or who knows, right? But they don't have it. So what does that tell developers both inside and outside of Apple about 3D touch? That, yeah, use it, but also use it, like, make it so that the things that people are doing with 3D touch, they can do some other way.
Well, it gets worse, because neither the iPad Pro parentheses 12.9 inch close parentheses or the iPad Pro parentheses 9.7 inch close parentheses,
the Pro 12 and Pro 9,
has 3D touch. And I personally thought that was a huge mistake. Not putting on the SE seems to me to be a huge mistake. If Apple is going to do a feature like this, it needed to have been rolled out in with every new device that came out.
I could argue that the iPad doesn't need it, but every iteration of the phone should have it if you're going to have it. And maybe they're telegraphing that, you know what, it's not going to happen on the iPhone 7. This was an experiment, and we're going to kill it.
Well, it's possible. I mean, you said something about it feeling like, I can't remember exactly what you said now, but it feels more to me like this is one of those things that Apple does and then just kind of ignores.
Yeah.
Apple has a long history of doing things like that, introducing some new technology or a new service and then letting it languish.
Yeah. And I'm still not sure, like, in mail, you know, where should I use it? Where should I not? It has not become part of my digital lexicon, if you will.
No, it really hasn't for me either, Dave.
Yeah, I know that it's there, and I've used it, but it's this thing of like, okay, oh yeah, that's right, I can do this. Okay, that's cool. And then I push too far, and it's like, oh crap, I did the wrong thing, and it's just a frustrating thing. But I've tried to, like, learn it, but there's not enough use cases for it. And maybe to your point, because I don't have it on my iPad, and that's a device that I use fairly regularly, you know, my digital lexicon just does not include that as one of its more popular gestures, because I can't use it everywhere.
That makes sense.
I don't know. I don't know, but I don't know that that's the problem. I think there's two problems with it. I think that's one of them, the non-ubiquity of it in all current devices. And also, and perhaps because of that, it's just not quite there yet, you know, and will it even get there?
The feature is there. Where the feature works, the feature is cool. And like one of the things that people were quick to, the developers were quick to jump on, is having options from the icon at the icon level, right?
Right.
That's one of the very first things that we actually got. And that in and of itself is not enough to allow the technology to truly gain use for us, but it is cool, and it was done pretty well by a lot of developers. At the same time, you have Instagram, which has done, which is kind of taken probably the best path possible by doing the tap and hold, serving the same functionality within the Instagram app as Force Touch, 3D Touch. Sorry.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's another thing. Why call the same thing different things on different devices? That seems to me to be completely idiotic.
But yeah, that's well. But that see, that's the thing. The fact that Instagram had to build it twice means that they had to limit what they could do with 3D Touch.
Agreed.
Right. They weren't just able to go nuts and use this technology as it is, as opposed to use it in a way that can also be approximated with this other thing for people that don't have it. And Apple is in the same boat. That's the problem. You know, it's not just third party developers. It's all developers. They have to work in this way. Yeah, but I'm not convinced. And again, you know, my experience is limited because of all of the things we just said, but I'm not convinced this even needs to exist on the phone. It's good on the watch because there is less interface there, right? Mm-hmm. You need something like this on the watch. It makes a lot of sense. I don't feel like I need it on the phone, and it's sort of confusing and in the way.
But the only reason why you don't need it on the phone is because of the problems that we already talked about.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If it was being fully embraced by developers and it was being fully embraced in a way that made sense, we would probably feel it was just as necessary on the phone.
Well, that's true. Yeah. If there were things that I had to use 3D Touch for on the phone, like could be done no other way, similar to the watch, then I would obviously use it a whole lot more. Maybe just by definition, right? Here's this thing, you know, and the only way you get there is by pushing harder. Okay, awesome. I'll do that. But because there have to be these other paths, no one's redesigning their UI based on 3D Touch. Nope. It's a gimmick, right? It's a little gizmo.
Why trust Apple? Why trust Apple at this point?
Well, they've telegraphed that you should not build your things for 3D Touch. Look at the iPhone SE. You know, we came out with this product because so many people are buying it, and we didn't want people to be buying this phone or a phone this size that wasn't the latest technology. So we came out with a phone this size that is the latest technology. And what does latest technology not include? 3D Touch.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it drives me nuts.
So it's not just me looking at 3D Touch thinking, wow, this is really cool, and I'm not really using it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How's Inkwell working out for you?
I used Inkwell a lot for like 6 months.
Why isn't Inkwell on iPads? Why isn't Inkwell on iPad Pro? Both of the parenthetical iPad Pros. Why? Anyway, this is just, I mean, we could come up with a lot of examples of things that Apple has introduced and then just let languish orphaned.
We could do a week worth of shows and still have more. Yeah. Well, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Dave, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here too.
Yep.
And thanks to both of you for giving me some validation on my feelings about 3D Touch. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.